Welcome to the seventh podcast episode of With Students in Mind. My name is Matt Townsley. I blog at www.mctownsley.net, and my co-host is...
I'm Russ Gerrans. I blog at russgerrans.com, and I guess Twitter, too. Did you say Twitter?
Go ahead. I'm at mctownsley on Twitter. Russ, you're at...
And I'm at Russ Gerrans.
And I hear you have a wife, that's my sister, Russ, that now has her Twitter handle on her license plate. Is that true?
This is true. She's got an at sign. I left with a sticker or a magnet coming in the mail. So I guess we are going to be prepared for anyone who doesn't appreciate her driving to be sending us tweets.
Tweet me if you don't like my driving. That's the 21st right. century way, I guess.
Right on.
Okay, let's see. Our format for our podcast, for those that may be listening for the first time, is a 1-2-3 format. One thing we can teach you. Two is two perspectives, where Russ and I pick a theme and we kind of discuss from our different perspectives how it impacts students, how it impacts us as teachers, with obviously an emphasis on students, since that's the name of our podcast. And then three is the 3-minute gut check, where we have questions that are not pre-discussed that we come up with, ask each other, and for 3 minutes we try to respond to that question without any... without any research, without any thought, just start the timer and get after it. Russ, I'm told, Russ, that some people fast forward in the podcast all the way to the 3-minute gut check. Have you heard that, or am I just dreaming that?
I have heard that from you.
I don't know how
far that goes.
Well, it may become a self-fulfilling prophecy if someone does it
in this episode. There you go.
So we'll see what happens. All right, let's get started. One thing we can teach you, Russ, tell us a little bit about this tool called Evernote that you've been using in your classroom.
You know, before we get started, Matt, I've just got this, it's been on my mind, so let's have it out here, okay?
Okay.
I'm not sure. I think we may need to phase out the one thing we can teach you.
Oh, my.
I'm just wondering if there is possibly a one thing that might be more beneficial to our listeners, that's maybe possibly more with students in mind, so to speak.
Okay.
So I don't know. We'll have to brainstorm ideas. I'd love to hear from listeners. I'd like to keep the rundown of the show in the format, the 1-2-3. So I don't know, one thing a student did to blow me away this week, or one thing that has a little bit more to do with students, I guess. It's not as bad this time, just because, you know, the thing we're teaching about Evernote, I've been using it with students. But I don't know.
Well, but I gotta tell you right now, my gut's just a little bit queasy. Just not because of where we're going, but just because of the change you threw at me here, Russ. So I'm gonna have to digest that a little bit. It's a curveball. All right, go ahead, as is, and tell us a little bit about Evernote. It could be the last thing we can teach you, the last one. We'll see.
All right, so Evernote is an app and a website online. It's a web app and an app for pretty much any device that allows you to capture just thoughts and ideas, capture pictures, capture text notes, clip in bookmarks, clip in all kinds of stuff on the web. One of the cool things about Evernote is that it syncs to all your different devices. So if I create a note on my Android phone, it'll sync up to the iPad and sync over to my MacBook. So that's one thing that's really nice about Evernote. Now, the way I've been using it, and this is basically me talking through a post that I wrote on my blog a couple weeks ago. So we'll link that in the show notes, and you can go there for a little bit more information. But basically what I use Evernote for is capturing student artifacts of their learning. So when I do a reading conference, a one-on-one reading conference with a student, I'll record the audio of that conference with the iPad and Evernote, and then I can make some observations in a text note that accompanies that recording. And if a student has a writing sample, for example, I can scan that in on our copy machine I can scan it in, and it emails it to me, and then I drag all those writing samples into Evernote, and I use labels and tags and stuff and folders to organize it. So basically what I'm doing is I'm building my own kind of assessment portfolio of my students. That way, if I want to know, or if a parent emails and wants to know how their student is doing, instead of sending home a percentage and saying, well, they're getting 85% in English, what I can do is just select a few of the notes that have artifacts of what they've been doing, along with my observations, and email that home to the parent, so the parent gets a little bit better feedback as far as what their student has been up to. So it works pretty well. The other thing that I really like about it is using kind of a standards-based system for assessing. So when students take that writing sample example that I used before, when students turn those in, when we're working on paragraph writing, you know, I'll score each of those on a beginning developing secure level. And so what I can do then is when I scan those documents in, I'll label them either beginning developing or secure, and then I can pull up a class and search that class for just the students who are beginning. And then it'll pull those out so I can see real quickly who's beginning on that skill, and I can pull them up and do a mini lesson with them. Or I can, you know, do the same thing with developing and see who's who's at the developing level and do a different mini lesson with them. So it makes differentiation quick and pretty easy, actually. So it's a tool that I've been using a lot. I basically carry this iPad with me throughout the day, so it's nice because I have my artifacts for all of my students ready to go wherever I am. There's one time in a meeting where I was able to quickly pull up a writing sample because we were talking about a student's handwriting, and we wanted to get that checked out, and so I could pull up a writing sample to show the other teachers real quickly. So it's been a pretty indispensable tool. It's free. A quick shout-out to Dr. John Strange. He's at the University of South Alabama. He is going to be sponsoring my class this year with a $45 upgrade to Evernote Premium. One of the reasons why I wanted that is because it allows for offline notes, so that way I can basically save the notes to the iPad, so I don't have to have, just in case the Wi-Fi is out or if I'm in a room where I don't get good Wi-Fi, I'll still have access to those notes. That's the biggest thing. Some of the other things that Premium does is allows you to upload more data per month and save bigger files and that kind of stuff. So
how is this really any different than just carrying around folders in a legal pad? It sounds kind of like a folders and legal pad system. How does it work differently for you, Russ?
Yeah, well, it works better for me just because I have three classes of 22 students, and so instead of having either one gigantic binder or three smaller binders, I've just got everything in this really thin iPad. The other thing that's nice is that recording. So I can record the one-on-one conferences, which helps me as a teacher become better at conferencing. This is kind of a new skill for me, and so I can kind of look back and like game tape. I can spend time reviewing the questions I'm asking and stuff like that. The other thing that's nice is that I can, when I do the scanning, well, I mean, for one thing, it just saves paper, which, you know, blah, 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 I'm being green. But it's nice because I can scan it in so that I have instant access to all this stuff, but I can also send home the artifacts to parents.
Oh, nice.
So,
very nice.
You know, instead of having to file them in the binder and saying, parents, you'll see them at conference time or something like that, I can just do this thing where there's multiple digital copies of it and that kind of thing. So
it sounds kind of like a digital legal pad plus digital folder plus digital recorder all in one, but digitally organized for you.
Yeah, it works out pretty well. I don't know what you call her, the other language arts teacher on my team, Amy, just recently decided to start using the same system as well for collecting artifacts and stuff like that. And she said, we were talking about it the other day, and she made mention that even she buys in. So I guess that's one way to, one of those backhanded compliments. So
very nice. Sounds really successful. How have your students reacted?
Oh, you know, just like middle school students. When the first time I've done a reading conference with each of my students, I show them the iPad, I show them the form that I'm using, and I show them how I'm going to record it. Some of them are like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. And some of them are like, whatever, Mr. G, I don't really care. Let's get this over with.
They're not impressed by the light reflecting off the shiny device.
No, some of them are, some of them aren't. It would be nice in a perfect world or whatever, one-to-one environment, whatever you want to, well, those aren't the same, but if I had more access, it would be nice if the kids could kind of manage their own portfolios in Evernote. I think it would be a tool where they could use that, but basically we're using their blogs. The students have individual blogs, so we're using those for kind of their portfolio. So I just see this as my own kind of assessment portfolio where I'm collecting evidence and collecting data.
Last question. What's the learning curve and setup time on this system? How long did it take you to do it? How long is it going to take Amy to learn this system?
It took me a few weeks to figure out. I didn't mean to stress me that in a strange way, but what I mean is I was really going through, ironing out the kinks and that kind of stuff. And so as far as coming up with the system and creating it, it took a few weeks. But after showing Amy, throughout the first few weeks, kind of what I was doing and stuff, when she wanted to create it from scratch, from creating a Evernote account to having all of her kids, this would be two artifacts for each of them, and a reading conference form created and labeled and organized, that took a half hour.
Wow, I think that's something our listeners can appreciate right there is you've done some of the groundwork. I'm not talking about like you personally, but here's a package deal. Someone can come along, use it, tweak it, and go with it. So cool.
Yeah, and while we were putting it together, while we were getting her started on it, she contributed really good ideas as far as the organizational scheme that we're going to start doing. Like, it was her idea to label each artifact with that beginning developing secure. It wasn't like I was just dumping in the idea to her.
Cool. We'll throw up a link to that post that you've written on your blog about it so others can see the details as well.
Sounds good.
All right, let's move on to two perspectives. Russ, it's the beginning of the school year. We've been back at it for about a month or so here in Iowa. So I thought it'd be appropriate for this podcast episode that we make that our theme, starting the school year, and discuss it from two different perspectives. Russ, tell our listeners about your background, what you are doing this year as far as, I'll start off. I'm moving into a new role. I'm in the central office for the first year. I've spent the last 6 years as a high school math teacher. So I'm now in the central office as director of instruction and technology in the same school district I've been at for the past 6 years. Russ, you are now in year two of the same setting. Basically year three of your classroom, but year two of sixth grade language arts. So looking back a year and comparing it to now, what's the same? But at the same time, what's the biggest difference you see in where you're at right now as far as your teaching goes and as far as where your students are at?
I'll start with the biggest difference because really everything is different. It feels like different in a better way. And this isn't to put down last year, but just, last year's my first full year in the classroom, my first time teaching language arts, my first time in sixth grade, and so this year, just having all of that under my belt, being able to see the scope and sequence, like last year, I was building the forest, so to speak.
Yes, good analogy.
A tree at a time. And now that I've seen the whole forest, I can go back and kind of trim up each tree to continue that analogy. I'm putting down mulch now and, kind of weeding between the...
Nice analogy.
It's nice to be able to know. It's nice to be able to know what's coming. Just because I can, just knowing that sequence and it makes me feel more comfortable. Like spending more time on certain things. Like I feel more comfortable if I need to take an extra day on something, I can do that. Or if conversely, if I pre-assess and I realize this isn't going to take as long as I needed it to, or if I was going to, then that's fine, and I feel comfortable doing that stuff. because I know what's coming next. Last year, I spent a lot of time just running to my other language arts teacher saying, what are you doing today? You know, what are we supposed to be doing? I'm very, I was somewhat lost and just feeling unorganized. And so, you know, having that experience helps a lot.
Cool. For me, I kind of answer my own question there. You know, I'm not in the same role. So I find myself kind of going back and forth between feeling like a teacher or trying to imagine what it'd be like to be in the classroom at this time versus assuming my new role as a as administrator. You know, for example, when I was leading professional development in those couple days in August, I really said, hey, what is it that I would want if I was sitting in the auditorium or in the commons at this time? What is it that I would be looking for right now to get me energized and focused for the school year to move forward to help students learn? So I really felt like I was doing an effective job there. Other times, it's so different going to more meetings, doing many more management tasks that really have nothing to do with students. I don't know, imagine filling out requests for the copy center all day long, where you know that someday these worksheets or this activity that you're having the copy center complete will be used by students, and you're just hoping it's going to be successful. That's what I feel like some of the tasks are in the central office. You do these things. Some of them you think are going to be effective and meaningful, but it's not necessarily going to happen that day or even the next day or even a week. And then when they do happen, you don't really know how effective it's going to be. So there's that layer of that distance, I guess, from students, which has really been a challenge at times.
So do you feel like, because this is what I've always really appreciated about you, Matt, is just the relationship idea. And so it seems like you've carried that relationship that used to be teacher to student. It seems like you've carried that into the central office where now it's administrator to teacher, that's that kind of relationship. Do you feel like that's true?
Yeah. During that professional development, I did some things that I would have done with my students. One of the things that I do with my students, you know, maybe after spring break or after Christmas break or after an extended time away, is I would kind of ask them, you know, what is it that you did over break that was interesting or something that you want to share or a milestone or just kind of a 5 or 10 minutes of get to know you. I realize you've been gone for a while. We haven't seen each other. So I did some of those get to know you type activities, you know, where people would get up out of their seats and go find someone else and talk about the best professional development they've ever had or the worst professional development. So I did some of those same things, imagining that this was my new classroom. And when we did our feedback for that August workshop or in-service professional development time, there was one negative comment about that. And the one negative comment was something along the lines of, hey, you know how much you're paying us for this in-service time? Don't you think we could be doing something better than get-to-know-you activities? But aside from that, people seem to appreciate getting up out of their seats, acknowledging that they were human beings and that they needed time to socialize and get to know each other and break the ice and so forth. So now I'm beginning to see them more as my students. The hard part about it, though, is I saw my students on a daily basis, but I don't see these same teachers on a daily basis. You know, there's 100 teachers or so in the school district, and I'm a district employee. I'm not in a specific building. So, you know, I may not have seen a given teacher or at least had a face-to-face interaction with them for weeks or months. You know, I can think of a few that I haven't talked to since that August workshop time. So that's the difficult part is you know, I believe that you can't do second order change. You can't have meaningful change in a district by just talking about it. You have to do it, and you can't just talk about it once and expect it to happen. So that makes it very difficult to have meaningful or lasting classroom changes on a system-wide or systematic basis to really impact students. When you really only see those staff, you know, for a couple days in August, and you don't see them again until, you know, that one early out per month or whatever it may be, that's the difficult part. And so then again, I shouldn't be complaining here. Things I'm trying to do is I have a personal goal of trying to get in every single classroom this year. I've started keeping a log on a spreadsheet. So I've written down every single certified staff member, what they teach. I'm just keeping a log of when I went to see them, about how long I was there, and also what type of feedback I gave them. Some of them I just have the opportunity to talk to them. Other ones I do a handwritten note, and still yet others just follow up with an email. It just kind of depends on those things. It's been anywhere from 5 minutes in the peeking in the door of the middle school vocal music room to 60 minutes of 8th grade language arts where I just sat in the classroom, I took the spelling test, you know, I did everything the students did and had an opportunity to talk to that teacher afterwards. So difficult, probably the hardest part is those Friday afternoons where you got energized, where you're typically energized by that football game coming up or the students' excitement, and here I am stuck in the central office doing a state report or something. So
yeah,
been a few days where I've just escaped and gone to classrooms at that time. That's the nice part about being in the central office is you can kind of roam and no one really thinks anything different of it. But
and this is like getting in the car, driving to places during the school day, kind of roaming.
Yes, I've got news for all the teachers out there. Central office people can walk out of their office, pull the keys out of their pocket, and drive to another building. Wow.
During the day.
During the day.
What kind of lunch do you have? You got an hour lunch or what?
That's another weird thing. I feel guilty at times. I was the type of teacher that was not very good at getting into the teacher's lounge for lunch. I would do it probably beginning of the school year, and then I just got too busy doing my own thing. So I'd be in my room with students or in my room eating while checking or tests or planning or twittering or whatever it may be. Oh, did I just say twittering during lunch? So now it's been more of sometimes eating while working. Today, actually, I spent an hour and a half or so at the elementary school eating with the teachers, getting to know the teachers.
Nice.
I'm going to ask you this question, Russ. It's not explicitly related to your classroom, but if a district administrator, if you got word that the district administrator was in your building for an hour and a half in the lunch area, would you A, think, wow, that's great, I sure am glad they care about us enough to talk to be here and get to know us, or B, oh my gosh, don't those guys have something better to do? Why in the world are they spending an hour and a half of their time here in our lunch area?
Good question. So I would probably think, first I would think, what's for lunch that he came all the way here to eat?
Well, we stopped by Dairy Queen, but
I can see both sides, you know. I would probably wonder why the teacher's lounge, you know, or the lunchroom or whatever, why not classrooms? That's just me.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
That's my mentality.
Okay.
You know, I would be like, well, I'd be like, oh, he's eating lunch. Why didn't he come by my classroom?
Okay.
I'm always sad when I hear the district admin were in our building, but I didn't see them. You know.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe I've never really taken the time to understand the time constraints that you're under. You know, but I just feel like even if it's just for 10 seconds, and I would love it for the kids. I would love for the kids to see the district admin come in. To my classroom in a not even evaluative, but you know, there's that step below evaluative where they're still in an admin role, but even literally poke your head in my door and wave to me. And that would be, I would love to see the students see me and the district people interact in that way. You
I
know?
See what you're saying. Yeah.
I mean, I played basketball with our, head of HR, and our assistant superintendent for whatever, building growth, or I don't know what his title is, but I mean, he's an assistant superintendent. My kids probably have no idea that these kind of the higher ups have no idea that they're actually humans that like enjoy basketball and athletics and have fun, you know, on Sunday nights, have fun doing this kind of stuff. And I just think it'd be great for them to see that we are, collegial. I mean, I have a one of my colleagues teaches seventh grade language arts, and we are just he's a great guy, and we've become really good friends. We're actually hired basically on the same day. We interviewed on the same day. And so now, you know, whenever we see each other in the hall, we make sure to, hey, what's up, Mr. Shockey? Hey, Mr. Garen, how's it going? You know, we love to show those kids that we enjoy each other, you know, each other's presence, and that we like working with each other. And that happens with all of my colleagues. Like, I really feel this year we've gotten really good at, when we see each other, the teachers are talking to each other and are showing the kids that we're excited to work together. And I think it has a, I think it has an effect on morale. So that was a really long non-answer, but, but I don't know. I mean, it depends on the teacher, you know?
I'm just trying to evaluate myself then. I can think of one, when I was in that language arts classroom, when the spelling test was handed out, I asked, you know, can I have one? I want to be a part of the spelling test. And I kind of, in a way that I would have done as a teacher, I taunted a couple of the boys around me, and I was like, I'm going to get all these right. Are you? And so,
right.
You know, in kind of a way, and they didn't know who I was. I was just the guy with the tie on that, you know, happened to show up. And in fact, some kid came in late, and I was sitting in the seat. So he was like, who the heck is that guy in my seat, you know? He was, yeah, so... I don't know. Maybe that was a step in
that
direction.
I think that's a good example. Yes, I think it's a good example of what I'm talking about.
All right. Well, I want to do. I think that's going to require more than just a 10-minute visit.
Yep.
So.
Well, and I think Matt, you don't get, and just like we always do as teachers, you don't get to see the benefits of that interaction. When you leave, the kids will ask the teacher, "Who is that guy?" And then he gets to explain, "That was the dude that, you know." He's usually at central office, so for him to be here was cool. He's coming in to check out what we're doing.
That you totally just made me think of another example. When I went to visit the middle school vocal music before school one day, it must have been some sort of jazz band or something. And I just walked in and I just sat down. The band director couldn't hear me because couldn't see me because her back was to me, but her kids could. And so I was just there listening, and she was, you know, she's really an energetic gal, really did a nice job of just being really excited about band that morning, about jazz or whatever. And I decided to take a picture with my phone, and I emailed it to her as kind of my, you know, feedback. Hey, appreciate your energy. Great job. She emailed back and said, oh, the kids were wondering who that was, and they said that you were taking pictures. So I think that kind of validates what you just said there, is that the kids notice. The kids notice.
Yep.
Tell me, you've mentioned in passing a little bit about your colleagues. Tell me a little bit about how your PLC, your professional learning community, is different this year, Ross.
Last year, my sixth grade language arts team, just because of some different teaming numbers that we tried, we had a couple of two-person teams, we had some four-person teams. Anyway, because there's two language arts teachers on each team, we ended up with 14 sixth grade language arts teachers.
Wow.
And I know, Matt, that you are just getting into the collaborative learning teams.
PLC, same thing.
And just that's too big for a PLC. It's too big.
I agree.
And so this year, my sixth grade language arts team, we are down to four. And the four of us are what I consider high functioning. And I can give you my best example of why I consider us high functioning. Just the other morning, we had been having a conversation about trying to move to more standards-based reporting, more feedback-focused as opposed to percentages and numbers and things like that. And especially in a reading and writing classroom, that makes more sense. You know, instead of collecting writing and trying to turn that into a number, we are giving feedback and using qualifiers. And we got to a point in our discussion on Thursday where one of the PLC members just said, she said, okay, we have to stop. I am not feeling comfortable with this. This is not working for me, and we need to figure out something else because this is too much for me to handle right now.
Wow.
And I think that is amazing that we feel comfortable enough
You have trust.
With each other. Yes, the trust goes so deep. And this is something, this standards-based stuff that I'm describing, we've been working on this as a PLC for more than a month, you know, and for us to be, we're putting the last nail in the building, and she says, stop, this is not working, we need to figure something else out. The trust that she had to tell us that when we were so close to the finish line, I was just amazed. I mean, I think that's so awesome.
And that everyone else didn't take it personally, or so it sounds.
No, because we value her, you know, we value her opinion and her feelings in this, because we know that we have to move together as a team. Otherwise, you know, we're going to be leaving, you know, it's just, we all know that we would rather do it right than come up with something and then go our separate ways back to our classrooms and have us all do our own things. You know, the reason why we're doing things together is so that it's better for the kids.
Wow.
And so, you know, the fact that we can disagree and stop and this is not right and then come back together, because then by the end of the day, Matt, we had it all figured out. I mean, we came back, we met for about a half hour after school and got it all figured out. It was just, there was confusion of, you know, terminology, and we weren't sure how to, and so we just cranked it all out, and now we're good to go.
Could I Skype into your PLC sometime? I think that'd be cool.
Yeah, I would love to. I think that'd be great, yeah.
I'd maybe bring along a few other teachers in our district just to give them kind of an idea, snapshot of what a high-functioning PLC looks like. And don't get me wrong, we've got some. It's...
Mm-hmm.
But I think just seeing another take at it and would be really
mm-hmm.
great. That'd be really
yeah,
cool.
Definitely.
Cool. I'll have to visit with a few of my building principals and see which we can get involved there. That'd be great. Very cool.
Sounds good.
I think we'll put a wrap on this part of the podcast. Good discussion there on two different perspectives on starting the school year. I think it's going to be a good school year, Russ. I think... As I've heard you say, this could perhaps be the best school year you've had so far.
Yes.
All right, we'll go ahead and put a wrap on this part of the podcast. Okay, that brings us to the last part of our podcast here, the 3-minute gut check.
Actually, Matt, if you wouldn't mind, before we get into the gut check, I've got an idea for iTech. We've got the iTech conference, the Iowa Technology and Education Connection conference, coming up on October 11th and 12th. That's
okay.
At the Coralville Marriott.
Okay.
You tracking with me? Are you with me? Okay.
I'm with you. You're surprising me again. This is two times. This isn't supposed to happen until the actual gut check here, but I'm following you. Go ahead.
So here's the idea. I'm thinking live podcast.
Oh.
From iTech.
You stream it or something like
I don't,
that?
Okay, there you go. We can Ustream it. Great idea. Okay, so we could Ustream it, and then I think we should do an open invitation to anyone who wants to join us. They could either send us a tweet, or they could just show up, and it'd be great. We could just have a little group podcast action.
Okay. All right, I'm following you. So tweet at withstudentsim, or if you're at iTech, track us down. Would that make sense?
Sounds great. We haven't figured out. It'll be spontaneous.
Okay. All right. We'll be just tweeting out when time is or something like that.
Yeah.
All right. So it'll be the first ever live podcast. It'll also be the first ever open invitation. I'm kind
of
nervous. I'm kind of nervous about the live thing, but...
I think it'll be great. If we do it after our session, then we'll kind of have practice anyway.
All right.
Basically, the session, I mean, remember that ISTE, the session is basically a podcast with guests.
Yes, yep.
So, you know.
All right. Yeah, let's do that. All right, so tweet us at withstudentsim or watch for our tweets on our live... An open invitation podcast with students in mind, iTech edition number 8, or whatever you want to call it.
We may have to shorten the name a bit before doing it.
All right.
It seems like a mouthful.
Fair enough. All right, here we are. 3-minute gut check. Russ, do you have the timer ready?
Kind of. I'm working off the the Android phone and the iPad tonight, so I'm not sure about the timer. I do have the timer, so this might work. I think we're good to go.
Okay, we almost need like a sponsor or something for the timer. Like this sponsor. That's is a good idea. If you want to sponsor us, tweet us at withstudentsim or email us or something like that. This could be the part of the podcast where our 3-minute gut check timer is brought to you by whoever.
Who would be a logical sponsor of the timer?
Onlinestopwatch.com or
whatever. There you go. Well,
who knows? I don't know. Maybe.
No, it's a good idea. Right. It's a good idea. We just decided tonight that we're going to buy that Skype recording program, so.
$20. We're looking for a $20 sponsorship for the 3-minute gut check. Let us know.
That's the platinum level. That's the platinum level sponsorship.
It shows what type of low budget we're on here when $20 is platinum. Okay. 3-minute gut check. You got a question ready to go, Russ, or should I ask you first?
Why? I feel, again, like I've been talking too much, so why don't we end with you talking?
Okay.
So ask me first.
Okay. Oh, this is fun. This is really fun right now.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so here's the thing. Now that I'm on the – now that I've made it to the dark side, you know, the dark side, the administrative ranks, I'm starting to realize that not every teacher is like you and me, okay? Not every teacher is self-motivated. They want to, you know, to be a part of a PLC or to do whatever it is to make their classroom better. Some teachers, in my opinion – just want to come in, do what they've always done, and collect a paycheck. Okay? So, just like our students, some students, they want to just come in and do whatever to get through the day, to get their C or whatever it is. So there has to be some sort of motivating factor. So, what is that motivating factor for the masses? Is it test scores? You know, we got to get our test scores up. Otherwise, we're going to be on the watch list. Is it... We gotta catch up with the 21st century. You know, kids just aren't prepared for the jobs that are out there now. We gotta make sure they know how to use all these computers. Is it? We're just not as good as that school district across the street, and we need to make sure that or down the road or in the other county, we need to catch up with them. What is that motivating factor for teachers? There has to be a motivating factor because not everyone is like you and me and self-motivated. 3 minutes, go.
Okay, here's the timer started. Okay, I would say, obviously, it depends on the teacher, but I would think that there are tons of different things that motivate teachers. I think there are some who are probably motivated by the power structure, you know, the ones who, need that attentive, silent, watching and listening, that performance, that teacher who is a performer. I think there is. Are you still there?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought it logged me out. I think there is. I don't know. I wish everybody was motivated just to see their students succeed, and I wish everybody was motivated to help their students learn. I don't know. I'm trying to think. I'm trying to put myself in other teachers' shoes who would be motivated by something else. But I'm always curious. What I guess maybe you get to a point where this is all you can really do. Maybe your career path is pigeonholed to where. This is it. Like, if you don't teach, there's nothing else that you can do. And so I get nervous because I've had conversations online with, like, Meredith Stewart and John Becker about this idea where, you know, if I graduate from college with a teaching bachelor's degree and teaching doesn't work out for me, what else is there? I mean, what else can I do with that degree? And so I think that at some point teachers get stuck where their only motivation is just to get through the day and get through the year so they have their summers to look forward to. Now, I truly don't think that that's any sort of majority or even a lot. I really don't. I've really spent time in four different districts, and I haven't seen that. And even as a student growing up, that wasn't really something that I noticed a lot of. Sometimes I just get worried more about student motivation, you know, than I think if students, it's cyclical, it seems like. If students are more motivated to be in school, then teachers would probably be more motivated to help them. But again, if teachers are more motivated, they'd probably be creating more interesting learning opportunities or whatever you want to call it. And so I think that would, continue that cycle. So I don't know. Good question. Yes.
What? Maybe I'll ask a follow-up here. I don't know if your time's up. Oh, your time's
that's
up now.
Time. Yep.
Maybe the better question is, what motivates them to change what they're doing? You know, like if we're already got good test scores, we don't have to worry about No Child Left Behind. You know, if we're already beating the neighboring school district, then who cares? And if our kids are already getting access to computers, then we must have the best classroom and the best school district in the world. So what I'm doing must be great because my kids are learning. So why do I need to be in a PLC?
I don't know. I mean, here's what I'll say. I totally buy in completely to this one, there's one idea from the Duke Fullers that I completely buy into. And it's the idea, I don't know if they came up with it or not, but I swear I've heard it, but it's the idea of the educational lottery. And that's one thing that motivates me to be in a PLT. It motivates me to collaborate with my other language arts teachers, is that I don't want my kids missing out and not learning. You know, I don't want them to be losing the lottery because they happen to draw my class.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what gets me to be checking with my colleagues, like, here's what my kids did, or, you know, oh, man, that I just did this just today. Is I went into Amy's room, and I was like, my lesson just completely bombed, and I'm pretty sure my kids didn't learn anything. And she was like, well, what happened? Like, what did you do? You know, and so I explained what happened. And she was like, well, this is what I'm doing. Because we just happened to be, we're usually a couple days apart or something like that. But she's like, well, we happened to be doing the same thing that day. And so she was like, well, this is what, this is how I taught it. And I was like, that's brilliant. And so I went back, and I feel like the next two classes I nailed it. They seemed really receptive. The stuff that I collected from them showed me that they you know, for the most part, got it. And so then tomorrow I can just go back and kind of quickly remediate the other class that I messed up. And, you know, that's the thing. I just, in a bigger school where there is a lottery, that's what motivates me. But then there are other schools. I mean, there's small schools where, you know, I mean, how many eighth grade language arts teachers do you have?
One. And then we have one that shared seventh and eighth. So one and a half, basically.
So there's basically not, you get the teacher, you know, that's the teacher you get. And so there's no intrinsic, you know, I hope my kids are getting the same, you know, learning that the other kids are getting, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, a teacher who's by his or herself in a small district, I don't know. I don't know what motivates them.
Just a question I've been wrestling with kind of from the flip side, but, I like the educational lottery thing. That I think I might use that. You know, it really makes sense, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, just to continue this for just a second, I was reading on Doug Johnson's, he writes the Blue Skunk blog, and he was writing something the other day where he was talking about how, as educators, you know, if we're going to get up in arms about these value-added tests, and, you know, if we're going to get up in arms about how standardized tests are this terrible way to measure how good we are as teachers, that we need to come up with some other way to be able to objectively measure ourselves against each other. And he said something, I should have had it pulled up here, but he said something to the effect of, as a citizen, I want to know how my district compares to another district, how my state compares to the other states, how my country compares to the other countries. Okay?
I agree.
Well, here's the thing. Why don't I care about that?
You want a quality education for your kids, right? There's a reason that you chose.
I do, yeah.
There's a reason that you chose, or that you're excited to teach at Waukee. And there's a reason that you would not be excited to teach at another district. Why is that?
Yeah, I don't know.
There's some reason.
I mean, what I was thinking about was, Iowa Core, okay, mm-hmm. we're putting together this Common Core, and I mean, whatever, 46 states or whatever have signed on for the Common Core, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So if we've all got the same standards, am I right in saying this, that the idea is that we've all agreed that these are the things that we want our kids to learn?
Yep, they're all the same, the common content, yep.
Right. Okay, so if we've all got that figured out, so I know that I and my neighboring district and my neighboring state and the rest of the people in the country are the idea is for the kids to learn those same things. Well, mm-hmm. if my, other than a sense of like nationalism or something, national pride, like if my students are learning those things that we've determined that everybody needs to learn, then I guess I'm good to go with that.
But the bottom line is that, they're not. They're not always learning that, and that's what differentiates the districts, I think.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that I feel like every teacher should be focused on his or her classroom. So if we're all making sure that every kid is learning, like, why does it matter? I guess this is my question. Like, why does it matter if my kids are learning the standards? How does comparing my kids to the kids down the road, how does that help them if they're supposed to be measuring themselves against the standard? I mean, it basically gets back to this whole idea of like standards-based reporting. You know, that's the point is that we're not comparing kids against other kids; we're comparing them against the standard. And so I think it's the same thing with this district to district, state to state. If we've all agreed that these are the standards that we want to measure against, then that's what we should be measuring against. I don't see how measuring my kids against Missouri's kids tells them anything.
Well, I mean, I think you're just maybe one step ahead. I think you're coming up with like the solution, and I'm still identifying the problem. Because again, if I'm moving into town. And I want to decide where to move to or which school to send my kids to, I'm probably going to make a decision based on a reputation or whatever it is. That reputation comes from something, test mm-hmm. scores, culture, whatever. And so there is an inherent comparison. I mean, and I know this is not a perfect analogy, but Consumer Reports magazine, they make a living by testing things, and people read that to find out, should I buy a Honda? Are they reliable? Or should I buy a Toyota? Are they reliable? Should I buy a Chevy? Are they reliable? And I know driving a car is different than going to school, but maybe school is even more important than that. You don't want to just trust your kid's education to a poor school district or building or whatever.
I think that analogy reflects what I'm saying. So the idea is that they, Consumer Reports has those certain standards, safety, reliability, cost, whatever, and that's what we look at, is that I'm looking for the car that does these, that gets a 4 out of 5 on all of them or something like that. If they were to say, like if Consumer Reports, if I opened it up and there's a review of a Honda and all it said was better than Chevy, worse than Ford, equal to Toyota, that wouldn't tell me anything because I wouldn't know what those other things were good at.
Sure.
So, I mean, if I move to Waukee and they say, well, Waukee's better than whoever, but they're worse than these other guys, that's not very informative. Yeah. Whereas if they could just say, here's the standards, here's where, the median Waukee student scores on each of these things. It's just, it's basically norm reference versus criterion.
Yep.
And my mindset, and I'm happy to be swayed on this, but my mindset is that criterion is pretty much always better than norm reference, because I want to know how the kid does versus what I want him to know, not how the kid does versus the kid next to him.
Mm-hmm. So you'd be in favor of this, you'd be in favor maybe then of at Waukee this percent of the kids understood these standards, and at West Des Moines, this percent of these kids knew these standards.
Yes.
I'm in favor of that.
Because too. then I would say, well, if obviously, if you're teaching the same standards, mm-hmm. you know, if the goal is for them to learn the same standards, well, one school is doing better than the other school, okay, that's what I'll do.
I'm in favor of that. I'm definitely in favor of that. We digress, though. You're supposed to be asking me a question right now. That was like a 10-minute thing right there. Whoa, how did that happen?
Good thing people, I think it was worth it. I think it was worth it.
Good thing people fast-forwarded to this part.
All right, so on a much, like, exponentially lighter note, here's my question for you.
Okay.
This is homecoming week here at Lockheed, as it is at many, many schools around the state. And we just, for example, today was Wacky Wednesday. And so I dressed up. I took a button-down shirt. I put a V-neck on top of that. And I put a half-loosened tie on top of that. Many students had hats on today, like, crazy hats. Some of the teachers had skirts on, cheerleading skirts, and et cetera, et cetera. Okay. So what do you think? Add to, take away, learning, community, socializing. What's your take on homecoming week dress up, pep rallies, that kind of stuff?
Hold on. Before we start the timer, am I supposed to be addressing the tradition aspect to it? Or am I supposed to be focusing on the, does it add value or take away value from learning?
Yes, both.
Oh, jeez. I only got 3 minutes. No! Start the
timer.
Yep.
Go.
First year teaching, second year teaching, I did not believe in the anticipatory set. I may have even said this on the air once before. I was terrible at getting kids engaged. I was like, kids should be engaged because this is school. And when I was in school, I was engaged. So by golly, you better be excited because this is just school. You know, like it was somehow comparable to Adventureland or a roller coaster or something. And then it finally hit me one day. I'm like, that's absolutely silly. Like you, Matt, you owe it to the kids. You owe it to yourself at least to make your class a little bit more engaging and interesting. And you also owe it to the kids. I mean, you've got this personality. I remember my principal once said, Matt, you've got this personality. You were way too focused on the content. You need to show your personality. And I remember a day where he was in my classroom. I was talking about statistics, and somehow I talked about how I got pulled over by a cop. And I made up this story. I actually did get pulled over by a cop, but I embellished the story a little bit and told about, you know, how he pulled me over because I was doing this and that related to speeding. And then I totally, like, used that thing, which of course kids are like, oh my gosh, Mr. Townsend got pulled over. And I totally used that to like tie in with what we were talking about that day. And my principal was in there that day, and he was really excited that I actually told this story. And he was like, Matt, you got to do more of that. And I would never forget that day. I'll never forget that feedback he gave me, because it was sometime around there where I just decided that I was going to be more of a storyteller, because that was just part of my personality. And got the kids engaged. So there is no way that I would ever advocate for getting rid of homecoming. That is just way too much fun. Again, same thing. First couple of years, I didn't dress up. I was like, you know, Mr., I'm a beginning teacher. I'm here to establish myself, blah, 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 blah. Then after that, I was like, that's silly. You can establish yourself in so many other ways. You know, you can develop that accountability with your kids, but they're not going to think you're a pushover just because you dressed up on homecoming. And I think, in fact, when we try to take away those fun things from kids, that's a culture divider. Because no matter what, if I don't dress up, maybe somebody else is going to dress up. And they're, Mr. Townsley, you're the terrible teacher. You just don't ever have any fun around here. So I think it's a culture builder. I mean, I'm not going to go so far as to talk about homecoming queen traditions, because I didn't ask about that. I've got a different take on homecoming kings and queens and some of those specific traditions, but I'm a big advocate for building culture in your school. Kids have fun at home. Kids have fun at summer camp. Kids have fun in sports. Kids have fun everywhere else. Why can't they have a little bit of fun in school? If we have to take 1 week throughout the year to dress up, you know, wear a wig or whatever it may be, I'm all for that. I'll never forget another good story when I was student teaching. I was student teaching with 7th grade math, and I was trying to motivate the kids to come in and kind of get started with this procedure we had going. And so I told them, I had my stopwatch that day. I was like, if you can do this thing in under this time, I will wrap this this towel. We had towels that we used to wipe off the chalkboard or whiteboard or whatever. I said, I will wrap this towel around my head and wear it for the entire class period. Well, sure enough, they did it, and I wore that towel on my head. I still have a picture of that somewhere. The kids remember that. The kids were probably talking about that all day long. When they came the next day, of course, they're like, Mr. Townsend, you got to wear a towel again. Like, they were excited to come. I believe that kids are genuinely, at least at the high school I taught at, they were excited to come homecoming week. Even the kids that didn't dress up, they were at least there and excited to see somebody else that dressed up. Because not every kid dressed up every day or, you know, whatever. But it brings some excitement, something to look forward to. I got news for other math teachers out there. Math is not really something to look forward to on a daily basis if all you do is talk about percents, fractions, standard deviations, and parallel lines. It's not that exciting. It's your job. It was my job. It continues to be my job to make it exciting. If homecoming is part of your excitement, I say do it. And for anyone that wants to get rid of it, maybe they should be the ones that sponsor our 3-minute gut check. I don't know. And we'll listen to
well them. Done. I let you go. I let you go a minute over. That's perfect.
A minute
well
over. Jeez. Oh man.
You had plenty. You had plenty to say about homecoming.
It's good.
I agree. I love it. I love it.
I'm thinking about dressing up for our homecoming next week, even though I'm in the central office. Is that acceptable? I don't know.
I totally think you should.
All right.
Really?
I'm gonna talk.
I can totally feel today that there were teachers who regretted not dressing up today, especially because today was the tough one. Yesterday was your favorite sports team, so that one's easy. Everybody just wears, you know, a jersey or something like that. Monday was another decently easy one. I forget what it was. What did I wear? Anyway, Monday was another easy one. Today was the first one you actually had to kind of get out a little bit and actually come up with something.
That's good. And I could really tell. Start the week early so everyone can get involved. That's a good idea. Well planned.
Yep. But today, so there were a couple teachers that came today. Like one guy had his whole, he dressed up, you know, he wore his traditional teaching outfit. So he had a long sleeve, button down shirt, khaki pants and stuff. He wore the whole thing backwards, even his tie.
Nice.
But you tied a tie and put it all backwards. So that was good. But I could tell, I could feel that there were some teachers who saw that others had dressed up and kind of regretted not dressing up. So tomorrow is 80s day, and we're pretty pumped about it.
You got to be rolling your pants. Are you rolling your pants?
Well, I'm going to – well, it's okay. Some of the ladies on my team went out together for prom dresses. They went shopping at Goodwill tonight for prom dresses. And then I'm going to do my best Don Johnson with the blazer, with the rolled up sleeves, and the, you know, t-shirt underneath, et cetera.
Nicely done. Kids are going to like that.
We'll see how it works.
Do the kids take you seriously? They took me seriously when I dressed wacky.
Oh, yeah.
They laugh. They have fun beginning of class, and after that, it's back to business.
Oh, yeah. I'm lucky if my kids ever take me seriously.
Oh, jeez.
But this helped a little.
All right. Well, that puts a wrap on our 3-minute gut check here. That puts a wrap on With Students in Mind number 7, really. You can find us, our archive, at withstudentsinmind.blogspot.com. You can also search for us on iTunes. I haven't checked it for a while, but I'm pretty sure we're there. If you search for With Students in Mind, you can find us on the iTunes store. Again, on Twitter, at WithStudentsIM. Tweet us about, why don't you recap the iTech challenge again, Russ, real quick?
So send us a tweet at WithStudentsIM. Are you checking that account?
I can be. I haven't for a while, but.
Me neither. So we will start checking that account, and if you send us a tweet, then we can figure out when we're going to meet up to do a live U-streamed podcast during the iTech festivities, October 11th and 12th. at the Coralville Marriott in Coralville, Iowa.
If someone's not going to be at iTech, maybe they could tweet us and we could give a shout-out to them. How's that?
Sounds great. Yeah, sounds great. It'll be name-dropping extravaganza.
Oh, jeez. All right, good. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to that. Let's put a wrap on this episode again. Russ, we are here
with students in mind.
Have a good one.
Have a good night, Matt.
See ya.